Hello, this is Ben. If you listened to our last episode, which was season 6, episode 3, you know that we had experimented briefly in 2023 with splitting the podcast into two feeds or channels. One was going to be the LGG pod that you know, and the other one was going to be called In Camera, and we were going to move all of the pop culture stuff over to the In Camera feed. That ultimately did not happen. It wound up being not as simple and straightforward or inexpensive as I anticipated. So we are putting the content all back together into just the regular LGG podcast feed. However, we did record several episodes when we were still planning to do In Camera, so this is the first of those, and you will hear a brief discussion at the beginning for about 30 to 60 seconds maybe, where we go over those plans. So you can ignore that part, skip past it, because that is not how we're going to do this. But just wanted to give you this little preface to explain why that discussion is there and why you can't ignore it. And without further ado, please enjoy our discussion of The Last of Us.
Welcome to A Lawyer's Guide to the Galaxy, a podcast about geek culture by lawyers with your hosts, Ben Siders and Kirk Damon.
So we are here today to talk about The Last of Us. We should say when we start out, LGG In Camera. This is our first episode. We came up with this idea last year as a way to kind of split up the pop culture aspects of the podcast, which are easy episodes to produce and put out, but don't always have as much interest for all of our listeners. So if you are here, we thank you for tuning in, and hopefully you enjoy this content as well. So we're going to be talking about pop culture things that we've seen and just kind of our general thoughts on it, what we like, what we didn't like. Hopefully we'll keep it current, but just also some old stuff. We might go back, and I love to do one where we like watch Beastmaster together and do that at some point. So
Name of the Rose.
We'll do a lot of these. It's going to be fun. But today we're going to do something that's relatively new, The Last of Us. If you've never heard of this, it was, I think it was on HBO, was it?
It's HBO, HBO Max, or Max now.
I don't know what they call it now. How do you have a channel when you can't decide what the name's going to be? So... Last of Us, based on a video game series that came out probably 10-ish years ago. It's kind of an older game at this point. I never played the game, so I don't know anything about it. Starring Pedro Pascal of Mandalorian. Mandalorian fame. I got a mumble mouth today. Pedro Pascal of Mandalorian fame. He's done some other things as well recently. He was in Wonder Woman 84 as playing basically Donald Trump. But he's in it. He plays the main character, Joel. The context, it's sort of the original zombie, not the original, but like sort of the modern zombie template where there's a virus that breaks out. It's based on
it's a fungal
infection based on a real fungus that basically exerts mind control over insects. But it can't survive in a body that has human-level temperatures. In the world of The Last of Us, global warming has caused the fungus to evolve to where it can. It takes over our minds and turns us all into rampaging, carnivorous lunatics.
Yeah, and basically you have standard zombie. You're bitten, you're infected. Absolutely nothing you can do about it. And you become a zombie, whether you like it or not. We have survivors who live out. That are not there.
They're like bunker cities. There's no cure.
And no hope of a cure.
No hope of a cure.
Thing at the start.
Except there's this one girl.
Well, we should mention the thing with this. This is going to have a lot of spoilers.
Oh, yes. Yes. What we're going to talk about up front won't spoil much. You find all this out in the first opening.
Episode. Yeah. First 5 minutes in respects.
So if you don't want spoilers, don't listen to this. But we know our audience pretty well, and we think people mostly either don't care or have already seen it. So there is a one girl who has been bitten, we find out later, and has somehow developed some kind of immunity. Mm-hmm. And there is a group of rebels basically within the sort of Nazi tyrannical government, called the Fireflies, who are trying to find her and get her to a lab where they can extract whatever it is she's got and try to turn it into a cure. Mm-hmm. And the story is Pedro Pascal's character, Joel, trying to get her from Boston, where the show opens, to Wyoming or Salt Lake City, somewhere out west.
Well, he wants to go out west because his brother lives in Wyoming. And I believe they know
there's a settlement out there.
It ends up being in Salt Lake City. And that's actually an important, I think, one of the late episodes is that they find it deserted, and that's an important aspect where it's supposed to be. Then they figure out it's someplace else. It kind of adds an extra episode. It's kind of an interesting thing.
It's also important to note that Joel had a daughter who he lost on the first day of the infection.
Not to infection.
She was killed by the military, by the government, and he's kind of become an embittered but highly skilled survival man.
The other thing you learn relatively quickly into it, Joel has a past. It is not pretty, though you don't know what it is. But you get the fact that Joel is a crane killer.
Yes, for sure.
And that is an important aspect of this. Now, what I also know, I have never played the video game, but I was chatting with somebody about this who has played the video game. And he points out the video game is a first-person shooter and you play Joel.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's what we're coming from with this, is Joel is the star of a first-person shooter. So Joel knows what he's doing and how to kill people. And that becomes very, very clear very quickly in the course of the movie.
So a couple initial thoughts I had. One, I don't like zombie movies in general. I've seen a couple. Like, I thought Zombieland was funny because it was like a different kind of zombie movie. But for the most part, I don't like zombie games. I don't like zombie shows. Yeah. You and I played State of Survival for a while, which is very clearly inspired by this.
Yeah.
Beyond that, I mostly don't like. I don't watch The Walking Dead. It just doesn't appeal to me. No problem with it. It's existing. It's just not my thing. But this I very much liked, and I think there's a couple reasons. One is that the story is not really about the zombie infection. That's sort of the backdrop for a character development
arc. It's a classic zombie movie in that respect. It's not about the zombies.
It's not really about zombies, and there's not a lot of obsessing over the exact mechanics of how the zombies work, and it's just more of a survival story about these people trying to it could have been anything. It didn't have to be zombies. It could have been marooned on an island.
So I'll do it the other way around. I actually quite like zombie movies as to what it is, good ones. Night of the Living Dead, I mean, the original Night of the Living Dead. Some of the remakes, you know, in conjunction with Dawn of the Dead is actually, I thought the movie, I think, is surprisingly good.
Shaun of the Dead is also, yeah.
Shaun of the Dead's good, you know, so whatever, yeah. The other one I actually particularly am a large fan is 28 Days Later.
Yes, that one is good.
Which I think is an extremely good zombie movie, partially because it reinvents the zombie as to what exactly it is. The key thing, and even like I Am Legend and stuff like that.
Okay, you've convinced me. I actually do like zombie movies. I just wasn't thinking about all of these.
Some of the things that I think, and the take I always make, and I've said this repeatedly, zombie movies are not about the zombies. Zombie movies are about the horror of the other people you're having to deal with.
Yeah.
The zombies are...
That's kind of a running theme in post-apocalyptic cinema in general.
Well, and really the point of the zombie is, I jump back to Night of the Living Dead, which I think most people would say is the epitome of what a zombie movie is. The point of the zombies is to trap you in the house with other people. That's the point of the zombies. You don't, you know, it can be zombies, it can be birds. Let's be Alfred Hitchcock for a second.
The Mist is a good example of that.
You know, we can trap you inside a building. What really the point of it is dealing with the other humans that are around you, and that those other humans are far worse than the zombies are. And Last of Us takes that to the extreme.
It really does.
And that's the reason I think it works, just to start off with as to whatever, you know, they have.
But I still like, you know, some of the zombie movies, there's just scenes that I would describe as slaughter porn. It's just nonstop.
Dawn of the Dead.
Yeah. It's fine for a scene. Like, it's funny. There's some of that in Zombieland has a little bit of that in it, but it's played for comedic effect.
There's some of that early in Last of Us.
So the first episode has a lot of that, but they really quickly, I was just expecting it to be nonstop, you know, Pennywise the Clown jump scares with zombies pouring out of every corner of the world, and there really wasn't that much of that. To your point, it was really more about how the survivors interact with each other, and a lot of the plot takes place when there's really not a lot of zombies around.
Yeah, there's a lot of episodes that have one zombie in them, and that one zombie is there as a plot point.
Yeah.
You know, they need to advance something in particular, they need to tell you something about some character.
The whole thing in Kansas City, the zombies were basically a deus ex machina to get them out of...
Well, the thing that I had with it, I'll tell you as to what it is. So I happened to make it halfway through episode 5, which is Endurance Survive, which is the episode in Kansas City. The one where they meet Henry. They arrive in Kansas City the prior episode, but this is the one that they meet Henry. I take it, and I truly would stand by this. I think that episode is one of the best pieces of science fiction I've ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
That episode in particular. Because that episode is horrifying.
Yeah.
On ways that you can't explain. And it's not horrifying because of the zombies.
No, that's what happens that's at the end. Yeah.
It's horrifying, and the zombies save you from it. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the thing that I think is just so brilliant. It's literally the zombies save you from the horrifying. You say it's a deus ex machina, but it saves you from the horrifying situation. Now, they set up that it's going to happen. I mean, they're pretty good.
It is better, because otherwise it does feel like it's a hackneyed writing trick. I've written my characters into a corner. The zombies are going to bust out and destroy all the bad guys. But they you're right. They set up that was coming, that was going to happen. So that made it better. But then also at the end of the episode, Henry gets infected, and then they do what they have to do. His father does.
Yeah, well, and he does it sort of unintentionally, I think, is one of the things with it, which also then plays into things you learn about Joel later in conjunction with his daughter. A few of the things I thought, so I think we get sort of into specifics of things I thought with the movie and with the show and stuff like that. A few of the things I really liked about the show, one of which was, you do not learn the character's past until the second to last episode.
Yeah.
And really the last episode. And even then you don't get all of it. I really like that. I thought it was something where you knew these characters had history, but you didn't really know what it was. It was very much focused much more on the, we have to find these fireflies. You're a potential cure. We have to get you there. And this is important. They also set up the idea that, and this is the other thing I really had from it. This is not a pleasant world.
No, it's brutal.
It's very brutal. It's very ugly. But it's also one of those things that has its tender moments where it plays around not just Joel and Emily, I think their name was. It plays around everything around it. And they really played that up in certain points. And I remember you mentioning to me when you'd seen it and I hadn't seen it, the episode having to do with Jack Black being the crazy survivalist.
Nick Offerman.
And that episode being one of those that has basically no zombies in it. Now, yes, it has like
a couple
five,
at the beginning. Just, they kind of set up
plot points.
Yeah.
And stuff like that in conjunction. But that episode is all about what does it mean to survive?
Mm-hmm.
And it sets it up in a way that's very tender, that's very human. But at the same time, it's two people in complete isolation
mm-hmm.
that just happen to live a very happy life while surrounded by zombies.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, this is a great episode. It really was a great episode. It was just so creative.
So well written. Yeah. It had moments of humor too. I love the scene where if you don't remember this one of Nick Offerman, who you find out is a homosexual man, actually
sort of doesn't necessarily realize it himself.
Yeah, doesn't realize it himself. Yeah. He's also like a crazy bunker.
He's a crazy survivalist
guy. Who's like one of these bunker guys. I think it's the government's full of Nazis. And of course, by the time the zombie breakout happens, the government is full of Nazis. Yeah.
And that's an important fact, is the fact that, yeah. And I can't remember the name of the organization is that runs these,
FEDRA.
FEDRA.
Yeah.
FEDRA is basically Nazis.
I love that scene where him and his, husband, I guess yeah. They're not really married, but they get in a big argument, and the other man is like, you always think the government's full of Nazis. He's like, it is full of Nazis.
It didn't used to be. and those kind of things were great, but it played off. I mean, it's their entire lives mm-hmm. post this apocalypse happening, and it really doesn't involve the zombies. You have the zombies early, which he just readily deals with.
No, they're fighting off raiders, other human beings.
And they fight off raiders at one point. That's the extent of it. Like, there's like one zombie that he basically kills out of hand with a remote trap and thinks it's hilarious.
Which is just storytelling to set up why he's able to survive. Yeah. He's got all these, and you get his skill set. It's so well written because all these little plot elements, they serve the narrative, they build the character, they establish the setting. It's all just so intricately put together.
But it also plays off of, and the things that they do so well with it, is it plays off him having this sort of idyllic life. It then plays into Joel not having this idyllic life. Because that episode occurs right after the woman he's in love with, I don't think he's married to, but I think he's in love with, that's what it is, getting killed.
Yeah, like in the second episode.
It happens
right away.
You know, and he's running away with this girl who's, not his daughter. You already know his actual daughter had been killed.
Yep. And he doesn't want to get attached to her. You can tell he doesn't.
And that kind of thing sort of with it. And it plays into where they arrive there, and the whole thing when they arrive there is that, our couple that has owned this has committed suicide in a very, as he said, it's incredibly stupid, but it isn't doubly romantic.
Yeah.
Why and stuff like that. And you bump into this thing, and it's the whole, we're leaving this to you and this woman. Like, you could live here forever, the rest of your lives, you could live here in tranquility because we created this compound, except for the fact that she died last episode.
Mm-hmm.
After you guys have had 20-something years of a relationship, sort of what they set up. And it's the kind of thing where you're like, it's incredibly tragic. And you really get that idea of like how tragic this world is because you have these points of incredible human kindness and edible niceness. And then you have the quarantine zones, which are awful.
Yeah.
And that was a lot of what I thought they did a really good job was setting up the quarantine zones being awful. Then you have that episode, which is like, no, wait, there can be good people out there. It's just, they're not FEDRA. Then you have Kansas City when it's, oh, wait, FEDRA's not the bad guys after all.
Yeah, it could be worse.
It could be worse. And you have essentially the rebels in the thing being like, no, wait, these guys are worse.
It was interesting when it starts, because not watching the playing the video game, I didn't know which side was which.
Yeah.
Because when it starts out, you're in kind of modern times, or really you're kind of in the, I think, the late 90s or mid-2000s.
Well, the original start is like the 70s when they're doing the TV show.
That's right, yeah.
They can't carry over.
Yeah, and everybody's laughing at that crazy scientist guy.
And then you have it happen basically present day. I think it says like 30 days post-present day or something like that.
Something like that. Like, we're supposed to think that the virus has been around for about 20 years by the time like the real plot gets going. But there is the scene at the beginning before it happens, which is really well done. They have the whole scene where they're in, I think, was it Malaysia maybe or Indonesia?
Oh, that's the start of the second episode, and they're in Jakarta, Indonesia.
Jakarta, yeah, one of the Pacific Island nations. Yeah. And they've got like the preeminent Mike
Fungal Anala. Fungal scientist, whatever that
is. And it all takes place in like the native language over there. And at one point, she realizes what's going on, and they ask her what to do, and she just says in English, bomb. Bomb everything, you know? And you kind of get the gravity
situation. And then she says, I'd like to go home now.
Yeah. So that's all really well done. But you get to know a little bit about the main character, Joel, before this all starts. So you get a glimpse of what his wife could have been like and was like. Yeah. And then how quickly it all went awry, like over the course of 24 hours.
He was just a contractor.
Yeah.
Now, one of the things they do point out, he was a soldier, if you remember.
Yeah, he was ex-military.
When he pulls out, you see a Desert Storm veteran.
Yeah, so you kind of understand where he gets his survival skills, his shooting skills, and he's a contractor, so he's got all the skills. You and I have neither one of these things, so if there's ever a zombie apocalypse, we're screwed.
Well, the thing I always joked about with it, I told people about it, so I'll pick on the episode with the couple and the crazy survivalist, is I said, when I watched the episode, I either looked at it and said, I'd be him, because I just end up gathering up all this stuff and basically building a fortress around it that I'd figure out how to use. Or, and the way that episode starts is they find the mass grave with the people that they tried to take the quarantine zone and there wasn't enough space. Mm-hmm. And you particularly see the woman who has the baby, and you see the skeleton where the baby blanket's blowing in the wind, and then you see the woman with the baby getting on the truck. And I said, I would have either been him or her.
Yeah.
Those are the outcomes that I see myself being in these. I either would have blindly followed whatever it was, thinking this isn't all that important, and ended up getting shot because they wouldn't be interested in me.
Yep.
Or I'd end up being the crazy person with the I'm not doing this and building essentially a fortress in it. Now, more than likely, I would have failed and not been able to build an electrified fence and everything else.
Yep.
But that would have been the kind of character arc I saw, is trying to do that, and for me, probably failing. But
yeah. How did you feel about the casting? I thought it was all very well cast.
The casting was very, very good. I thought they did a good job with all the characters. They did a good job with the way they wrote the characters, their personalities. I thought a few of them. I thought Joel could have used a little more depth, but I don't think I think they wanted that on purpose.
Wanted him to be withdrawn.
Yeah,
and kind of hard
think
to get
that
to know.
I don't think that was the actor. I think that was done as a directorial choice. I thought Emily was hard. Again, is it Emily?
Ellie.
That's it. Ellie was hard to understand at the beginning.
Yeah.
And it wasn't because you didn't understand her character. It's that you didn't really understand what the whole deal was around her. There was a lot of things you had to get in the first episode around her.
There was a lot of world to establish. And when it first starts, like I was starting to say, they mentioned the Fireflies and these patrols. I just didn't know who was on which side and who we're supposed to like or not like. I don't know if that was a writing choice to like not make that very clear, or maybe it was clear. I just didn't know.
Well, and she's essentially a prisoner of the Fireflies when it starts off. And that's one of the things with her where I'm like, wait, who are the Fireflies and why does she want to find them? Like, okay, you know, those are the guys searching for the cure. Okay, but weren't they like the terrorist organization? And they kind of play with that later on of like, I think the overarching thing behind this is what I had is there are no good guys. Like that was one of the things that I think was a real overarching deal behind this. There are simply people that are surviving, and then there are people that feel like they're having the tender moments. Like, and again, to return to our survivalist couple, he makes the comment, as he said, my job was to save him. That was the only thing I had to do in life was save him. You know, one person, and that's why I did it. Now, that's an important aspect for later on in it, in conjunction with it. But it's also one of those things.
Because that becomes Joel's mission.
But it's one of those things that also is a good setup of the idea that basically says, my job is just to save him and to live a happy life. My job is not to save the world. My job is not to.
And once Frank had cancer and was going to die, then there was no.
He
loses
his reason to live. And that's the whole point behind it.
They both take some. I don't know what they took, but they did some kind of drug overdose with a bunch of wine, and that was it.
Sleeping pills. Yeah, they hit to one point down with sleeping pills. I thought they did a great job with that. The comments I had with it from it is I thought the show really got. And again, remember I binge watched it. So
I watched it as it came out. So
well, and I binge watched 5.5 episodes. Then I spent 3 weeks not watching anything, and then binge watched the rest. which is kind of a weird way to see it. And I literally made it halfway through the Kansas City episode. I made it to just before they entered into the Underground. And I actually purposely stopped it there because I figured the Underground was going to involve a lot of... We'd seen that there were zombies under the ground, stuff like that. Yep. And so I figured that was going to be, okay, this is going to be where it sort of turns and the rest of the episode is going to be about this. The Underground's like 5 minutes.
Yeah, I thought the same thing. I was like, oh, there's actually no zombies down here.
Yeah, and it was like, okay, that was fun. Like, and that was a lot of what the show did. It did a great job of playing with your expectations of like, oh, wait, there's going to be lots of zombies here. No, they're not.
That's what I liked about it. I actually thought that the zombies are the least interesting part. Like, that scene at the beginning, the first episode or second episode, where they're walking through that abandoned building and they're fighting off the zombies.
Oh, that's Faneuil Hall in Boston.
Yeah, that was extremely well done, because you have to establish how dangerous and what a threat the zombies are. But then you don't need 8 episodes where it's... Like, The Mandalorian fell into this trap of there's 5 minutes of plot and character development and just a bunch of pointless, undirected action that, while it's well done, well directed, and cool, it doesn't really tell us. It's not in service of a story.
Yeah.
It's just in service of action. And I like that they didn't fall into that trap and gave the characters and the actors, they had enough confidence in the material and in the setting and in the cast to let them really shine and not get upstaged by the setting.
Yeah. And that's, again, and I'll tell you about it. You know, so the episode's Endure and Survive. I happen to know it because of the names that this showed up in conjecture. It was the episode where you first meet Henry and his son, and they're sort of trying to escape from Kansas City. And the comment I had with it is that's an emotionally devastating episode in a lot of different ways, both in the idea of you really get the fact that, like, hey, there's these, like, Federal's evil. Like, you've really had the thing, like, Federal's evil. You know, even the comment with it is, you know, that's because you think they're all Nazis. Well, they are. Well, that before you thought they were Nazis.
They weren't always Nazis.
And that kind of thing sort of with it. And then you see these rebels who are worse.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh my God, these people are awful. And you encounter their head and it's, she's just fixated on vengeance. She doesn't understand the fact that, like, this is pointless. And you get people following her of going like, oh, well, because we actually escaped, we're going to follow you. You know, this blind following. And you're like, these people are terrifying. Like, you know, what are they going to do? These people are terrifying. And then you kind of get at the end where this vengeance causes all these problems to Joel. It's going to, you know, and they're potentially going to, you know, cause all these problems to people who are innocent in many respects. And you kind of feel sympathy for her. And Henry and his son being one of them, you feel sympathy for Henry and his son of, like, what he had to do.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you get through it, and then it's the, oh, great, well, the zombies kind of ended this for us. And you kind of get the thing with it. And again, it's, you kind of get that cathartic scene where it's like, I didn't expect the zombies to help, but they kind of did. And then you get the fact that Henry's son is infected, and you get, again, the very tender scene with her and
the little boy. And you think she's going to cure him, right?
Well,
she knows.
She would, actually.
Yeah, but she knows that she has the immunity. You know this by now. And, you know, just, you know, writing 101, oh, that's how they're going to save this little boy. Because, of course, you're not going to kill the little boy who has autism or something.
Yeah.
He's got some kind of developmental disability.
He's deaf.
Yeah, oh, he's deaf. That's what it was. He's deaf. Yeah, that's right, because they sign a lot. So he has a disability. So they think they're not going to kill the little disabled boy. But they did.
Oh, and then they do. And they do it in a horrible fashion.
Yeah.
And you get the fact of, like, Joel, when he's trying to talk Henry out of killing himself, having realized what he's just done.
Yeah.
You know, and stuff like that. But, like, Joel has a much better understanding of this than you thought he did.
Yeah.
Now, you know he lost his daughter, but suddenly it's the, hold on, something else has happened here. What else is going on? You know, things like that. And it's one of those where, as I said, you know, by the end of that episode, you're sort of sitting here and you're like, what just happened?
Yeah.
Like, this was all because of the fact that they detoured, and I have to admit, I love the fact they detoured in Kansas City, because if you've ever driven through Kansas City, if you detoured off the interstate, that is exactly what would happen. It's so dang easy to get lost in Kansas City.
I read that scene in the game takes place in, like, Pittsburgh or Cleveland, somewhere out east. I'm curious why they moved it to Kansas City. If they just wanted to show more progress and how
far they'd
gotten.
I think they wanted to show more progress and how far they'd gotten, because they had a truck. And the issue with it is when you're walking, it would take forever to cross the country. But when they had the truck, they could get them a lot of distance. And that was helpful, I think, behind it.
Because Boston and Kansas City is a long way. At some point.
yeah, they did. And they went through a bunch of other cities.
Probably stopped here. Probably would have looked the same.
Exactly. I did think it was great they chose Kansas City, because it is Kansas City's a maze when you get off the interstate. Even the interstates are a maze. And so I really liked that sort of, you know, piece behind it. I liked the fact that there were little tidbits hiding in it. One of the big things I had during the whole movie, and I think it was one of the things you were supposed to be questioning, is she the only one who's immune?
I didn't really pick up on that part. So where did you see that?
So the reason I had it from it, and this is a thing that I particularly had, and again, I thought there were some really interesting sort of subtle things in it. So one of them is, when we first meet the woman in Jakarta, and we start learning about where did the infection come from. She sees a cadaver, which is an HBO, like, because we can actually show people naked, we're going to show the cadaver, which is a good scene because it's just so stark.
Yeah.
It really is this idea that, like, this is very medical, it's very clinical, what's going on, and then you have her incredibly emotional response to it.
Yeah.
And that's you know, and she's a PhD, you know, fungal scientist. But you have the thing with it where they describe what happens, and he says, oh, well, one of the things they did with it is that they were working in a flower plant.
That's right.
What did they make? Pancake mix. When you first meet Joel's daughter, she's making breakfast. And what is she making? Pancakes.
Oh, I didn't pick up on
which
that.
Which she eats, but Joel hates pancakes.
Hmm.
And so one of the things I played off of is, was his daughter infected? Because if she'd eaten the pancakes that made everybody infected, shouldn't she have been infected? But she's not. Are we going to find out later on she was immune?
Oh, wow.
Are we going to find out later on that the boy they show you at the beginning who shows up at the place where they kill him because he's infected was immune? Are we going to find out that there's lots of people that are immune, but they keep dying?
Interesting.
And that was for other reasons. And that was the thing I was really playing off of. Is Ellie going to die because they can't keep the people who are immune alive because they don't realize it?
They imply that she would be killed immediately because she's been bitten. And yeah. They would freak
out.
Well,
I bet you see that with the boy with the green tennis shoes, which is literally the only way you know him.
Oh, that's interesting. I did not pick up on that at all.
And so that was my play, is are we playing? Because not knowing the plot, not having seen the video game at all, I was really doing the idea is this movie supposed to be the cure is in hand, but you keep losing it because you're afraid? And that's where I thought they were going. Quite frankly, that's really where I thought they were going with it, was going to be that kind of a thing. And I was like, I just kept guessing. I'm like, are we going to learn it was his daughter? Like, one of the ones is his daughter. Like, we're going to find out more stuff about the pancake mix, because I just happened to catch that. It was probably a throwaway scene. It may not have even been on purpose, although I think it was.
I'm sure it was. That's not a coincidence. There's no reason to explain what the flower is used for otherwise, you know?
And so it was that kind of thing where I was like, okay, that's an intriguing scene, you know, sort of behind it. But are we going to see stuff like that? Are we going to see Henry's son? That was one of the questions I had when she does the thing with him, is no, he's actually immune. It's not her, it's him. You know, that kind of thing. So were we going to see this thing where, like, kids were being born immune?
Interesting.
And that was kind of the play off of it. And so, and again, they didn't go there. That was clearly not the plot. I mean, I was chasing a red herring completely. Like, there's no question that was not the plot. But it was an intriguing concept to me of how they were playing with it and where it went. What I then started to get with, and again, what I sort of had was so interesting to me, is the first part of it more is a lot of world building, a lot of setup, a lot of good plot. The second half, starting really at episode 5, you really get into the horror of other people.
Mm-hmm.
And we find the town in Wyoming, and you get the fact that, like, this is a boom town, like, it's working, it's like an Old West boom town, it's kind of cute in the way they do it and stuff like that. But it's also the kind of thing that, like, no, they're really scared of outsiders. Like, there's some real concern here. And there's legitimate reasons for it, but, like, there's concerns here. Like, these people are not great either. But this is kind of idyllic.
It's as good as it's going to get.
It's as good as it's going to get. Then you get into Colorado, and you get our crazy preacher.
Yep.
Which, I knew it was a cult in the beginning, and I knew the cult, and I knew what was going to happen to Ellie before it ended.
Yep.
And, you know, I knew right away what he was. In one, I think he was one of the better actors in it, quite frankly, portraying this completely unhinged, but not completely obvious that he's unhinged character.
Yeah.
There's
a lot of that was done really well in this show. It's unusual to see a show that exercises as much restraint as this one does. Mm-hmm. It's really easy and lazy just to lay everything out there for you. And that asks the audience to do a whole lot of work while you're watching it. And while I don't want to always be mentally laboring every time I watch something, I do like it when a show holds a little bit back. And really lets, because cinema is a visual narrative. We are telling a story visually. That's what makes it so unique. And when you just when you don't do that well, there's a lot you can convey and imply through how you block a scene, how you direct the actors. And this show was just one of the best I've seen in years at unrolling all of the narrative elements to you thoughtfully, carefully, and through the visual medium, rather than just having a bunch of dialogue where people explain the entire plot to you.
The other thing about it is, and like I said, there are 8 episodes, 2 of which are set entirely in the past and have no effect on the plot.
Yeah. The entire Nick Offerman thing. You could have skipped the whole thing.
Yeah, and episode 7, the one with her and the girl that she encounters from the orphanage, I guess it is, or the school, is unnecessary. other than to establish a little bit of character.
And how she gets bit, you know?
Yeah, but you already knew it. You already knew who she was. You already knew the basics behind it.
Was there anything in that episode that suggested how she got to be immune?
No, the episode that suggested is the very beginning of the last episode. She's immune because her mother's bitten before
that's
she
right.
the umbilical
that's right.
cord.
Yeah.
Just gave a massive spoiler.
I forgot about that one. Another brutal scene.
It's a brutal scene, but also the thing with that scene is, to me, that was one of those where we knew we had to find out why she was immune. And it's knowing that was the last episode, it was the appropriate place to put it. Because it was the, okay, what you really get from that scene is, no, she's really unique. Mm-hmm. This is unique because this is a very weird situation that could not be readily duplicated. Okay, that's great. Like, you know, then again, that was when I then realized my whole red herring of the children, this is totally wrong. But that was good, you know, and again, I like that as to what it is. Again, it's an emotionally devastating scene, you know, as to what it is, and it's a well-done scene. But it's also similar to some of the other stuff you'd seen earlier. One of the things that I thought was very intriguing is how often you'd see scenes that some other character had played out earlier. Hmm. So, for example, she goes in, she can't shoot her. She takes the baby. She goes outside. Then she says, cover her ears, strides back in purposely and shoots her very purposely, which is the exact same thing the head of the Kansas City Rebels did to the doctor.
Yep.
It's exactly the same action. And it was one of those things where there's 5 or 6 times during it I saw that. And I'm like, they're comparing people against each other. One of these is outright murder and the other's humane. But they're not any different.
Yeah.
You know, and that kind of thing. You're like, okay, this is what they're getting at, is the idea that the people are awful. Everybody's awful. You know, sort of with it.
Or the people who aren't awful are being forced into awful choices.
Being awful choices or just being awful and sort of stuff like that. It really did kind of work as to what it was. What I thought was interesting, we'll get into the thing with it. And I'll ask you the question because this was asked to me on the plane. What did you think of the ending?
So I thought the ending was probably the only way it could end. So 2 thoughts on that. One, I actually, probably my least favorite part of the whole thing, although I understand why it was there narratively, was Joel's gradual rampage through the hospital facility.
Yeah.
It was well done. It just wasn't interesting. I knew he was going to get her and get out. I mean, that was going to happen.
I actually didn't think he was going to.
Really? Oh, I figured
I thought he was going to get there and she was going to be dead.
I figured he would get there, get her. The way it ended is exactly how I thought it was going to end. He was going to get her, get out, and then lie to her about, because I also knew there's going to be a season 2 by the time that came out. So I'm like, all right, well, they're going to bring the same people back. So whatever happened in the video game, I don't know, but they're going to have,
that is apparently the way the video game actually ends.
Is it? Okay. Yeah. All right. That's good to know. So I figured that was going to happen. And that there would be some kind of, you know, point where he has to lie to her about what happened so that they can have a falling out in the next season and then patch it back up again later. That's just kind of how narrative arcs work. But the whole cinematographic process of him going through the hospital and killing everybody, I guess it's appropriate for his character. It kind of shows like how he'll stop at nothing for, you know, not going to lose another daughter this way. But it was overly long and unnecessary.
So the thing that I had with it, I found it actually anticlimactic, which one of the people that I was talking to him on the airplane, having seen this, they couldn't believe me. They thought they were like, how did you do it? And I'm like, one, I kind of expected it. As I said, basically from about the 3rd episode, I didn't think this was going to work.
Yeah.
I didn't know how it wasn't going to work, but I didn't think it was going to work.
Yeah.
And I thought they needed to get all the way to the end and have it not work for so whatever reason. And again, that's where I kind of looked at it is she going to die at the last step before she gets there? And that's the problem. What I realized with it, and this was my take of it, his rampage through the hospital is a first-person shooter game.
Oh, yeah, it is.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
And that's why they play it that way, is because it's, you actually see it as a first-person shooter for the first time.
So I like it a little better knowing that. It's a little bit of an homage to the video game. But, like, a lot of the commentary I've seen online about the series is mostly from fans of the game complaining that there's not enough zombies in it, not enough zombie violence in it. I've got no problem with violence in my cinema, but it has to serve a plot purpose.
Yeah.
And just shoving zombies into the scene just so we can slaughter them, It's just, I don't know, it's boring. Like, yeah. Okay, I know these characters are going to survive to the last episode, so I don't care how many zombies they mow down to get there, unless you're playing it up for some specific purpose, like in Zombieland.
Yeah.
You know, it's just pointless. So,
few of the things I bumped into with it, Joel kills far more humans in the show than he ever kills zombies.
Mm-hmm.
By a lot. You know, things that, my problem with the ending is it made no sense. The Fireflies would never do this. It made no sense.
Wouldn't do what?
wouldn't to basically do the idea of she's going to die to us to try to get this thing out. The reason being is because the one person who knows how unique she is Mariana.
Mm-hmm.
You don't kill her, because if you kill her, you can't go back.
Yeah, that's
true. How do you know you can make this thing from what she has? You can't do this. This is a massive mistake. And that was the thing that I had with it, is I'm like, you have this massive, massive setup that has taken place for years to do this that makes no sense.
So they're going
to
do this experimental surgery that may kill the host, and then...
Oh, it would kill the host. I mean, yeah. You get the impression it would kill the host. That was the whole idea. And the problem with it was, is I looked at it and said, why on earth would you kill her?
Why would you just study her for longer? Do some blood samples and other things and figure out what's going on?
Well, I'm going to be brutal and sort of the thing in conjunction with it, but wouldn't you want her to have kids?
Oh, yeah.
Because you want to see whether or not it passes on. You know, I mean, like, the whole concept behind the surgery makes no sense. Mm. Now, it sets up Joel's rampage.
Yeah.
But it makes no sense from the Firefly's point of view. And it makes no sense from a movie which has made enormous amounts of sense in the way it's done everything up until that point in time. That's what bothered me about the ending.
Maybe it's because they were trying to be true to the video game, and so they've really kind of gotten away from all the first person shooter tropes.
Yeah.
And so at the very end, they wanted to pay it all off.
And again, that's also the way the video game ends, yeah. Is my understanding.
I'm sure the end of the game is just a giant first person shooting rampage.
It literally is that kind of story, is you have to go rescue her and that kind of thing, sort of with it. The other thing that surprised me with the ending is I expected Joel to lie to her about what had happened.
Yeah.
But I also, and this was the thing that bothered me, there were two things that bothered me. One, there's a whole scene with Mariana, and she's like, isn't this what she'd want? Except you kept from her what was going to happen so she wasn't scared. That was her line, like 5 minutes before that.
Mm-hmm.
The one person who didn't ask was Ellie.
Yeah.
Ellie probably would have done this. Except she's the one person you don't ask. That doesn't make any sense. You know, and again, that's where I bumped into it. It's like, the Fireflies make no sense. Not even as a terrorist organization. They make no sense. And having just seen the episode with her in the past and her friend in the past that's kind of joining the Fireflies, I really expected them to go in and make the Fireflies as much more complicated. They were going to be a complicated, interesting organization that was kind of parts and things like that. We were going to get that at the end. Because now we have the Fireflies. We have her friend joining them. You know, sort of stuff like that, and the way she gets bitten. Okay, we had so much we could have done with the Fireflies. And in the end, they were just horrible like everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think that was kind of the goal. They were just horrible like everybody else. But at the same time, their motivation doesn't make any sense. And that bothered me. And that's why the thing bothered me. Because they said you're not supposed to be rooting for Joel. But you do, because you want him to save Ellie. Except I do, because the Fireflies aren't going to get what they want. Like,
yeah.
If the Fireflies do what they intend to do, it's not going to work. Like, that was the thing I had from it, is they have no guarantee it's going to work. But they're 100% convinced it will. And they've set up this huge, massive story arc that doesn't make any sense as to how you would do this. Why is she chained up in the beginning by Mariana?
Yeah, you know, I need to go back and rewatch it, because that doesn't make any sense. Like, does Ellie, that's where I thought the beginning, I struggled a little bit to understand what was going on and what the relationships were. So she's chained up. Is it because they think she's a threat, that she's infected and she's going
to
bite them?
I got the impression that was supposed to take place right after the end of episode 7. So the two, her and her friend, are both bitten, and they do the thing with let's lose our minds together.
Yep.
And then you find out episode 8, I did what was necessary. You know, that kind of thing with it. I get the impression, because she obviously wouldn't have made it back to the boarding school in time.
Yep.
She goes back, she gets back in, she gets captured by the Fireflies coming to find her friend. And that's where they capture her. She has no idea who the Fireflies are, what the whole thing is, even though Mariana knows who she is. That's more an accident than anything else. The problem with it is it's planned. And again, that's where I kept bumping into who the hell are the Fireflies? And I just couldn't work out who the Fireflies were. And it's kind of your point of like, am I supposed to be rooting for them or not?
Yeah.
I couldn't even figure out who they were. And that was the problem with it. I'm like, we get the fact that they're a terrorist organization, but we never saw them commit a terrorist act. You know, we've heard they firebomb things, but they just did it. You know, those kind of things. And it's like, okay, but like, we saw Fedra, we saw the rebels in Kansas City, but they weren't the Fireflies. Okay. Why are we not giving us some background of the Fireflies? And that was the one thing I had problems with, is I didn't know who the Fireflies were.
And I guess by the end, you still really don't really know like where they came from.
Why they're doing?
I guess you understand there's sort of a freedom fighter movement that's resisting the sort of dictatorial.
But they're trying to find a cure.
Yeah, trying to find a cure. But like, so is Fedra not trying to find a cure? I mean, so what's Fedra's motivation? Is it just about maintaining order, and they don't care because they got a bunch of people in power
they
don't want to give it up?
They can find a cure. Yeah. I think that's the issue with it. Is they think it's hopeless, so it's just maintaining. They're the Empire.
Yeah.
You know, everybody wants order. But yeah, so that was my one big complaint with the show is I really felt in episode 8 that suddenly we have the Fireflies. I'm supposed to feel bad for the Fireflies, but I don't even know who they are.
Yeah, maybe that's why that final scene, the first-person shooter part, fell flat for me. I didn't really care about any of the people that he was mowing down. I didn't know who they were.
Even Mariana I didn't care about.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that confrontation didn't really do much for me. I'm like, I know what's going to happen here, and that's it.
Yeah. The one thing I was expecting from it, and again, I kept wondering if they're going to do it, is after she does the whole lie, at the very end, he does the whole, like, swear to me what you said is true, and he does the I swear.
Mm-hmm.
I was expecting her to do some response back with, you know they asked me.
Yeah.
To imply that she knows it's all a lie. You know, something like that as you know what it is, but she's okay with it. Like, okay, we're just going to move on. They didn't go there, now they may go there in season 2. But that was the thing that I had with it. And so again, to me, the ending was unsatisfying, not because of the fact that I had problems with it being this massive shooting thing, but because I felt like they needed one more episode to set up the Fireflies. They did such a great job of setting up so many things in that.
Yeah.
To not do that one, to me, felt problematic. Even if they set them up as being an enigmatic organization,
mm-hmm.
they just did nothing with it. And that was the big problem. They didn't talk about how long did Mariana get there.
Yeah, I guess I didn't really put that together either. I'm not sure why.
You know, Joel has the only truck.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's those kind of things where it's just, the episode felt wrong. Now, again, I get the idea that they were trying to go off the video game from what I got from friends. And again, I haven't played the video game, so I don't know if that's true. But I got that from the stuff with the video game is, okay, this is what they're trying to do, is they're trying to make that scene. They're trying to make it this big climatic scene. And to me, it was like, I already knew this was going to happen.
Well, and there's the whole thing. So one thing that I thought they did not do as well as they could have, there's not a good sense of time passage. There's a little bit with like the seasonal changes.
Yeah.
And you can kind of infer like how long it's taken them to get from A to B.
That's a year. I mean.
Yeah. But it's not really explicitly stated. I know this is contrary to my prior thing about don't overload me with, you know, information, but it's when you have a story that's about character development, you kind of have to understand a little bit about the passage of time so that you can understand, you know, after Joel got stabbed, how long did she spend like taking care of him? And it's not information you really have to have to make sense out of the plot, but it helps me orient myself and where I am in these characters' arc. You know, was he down for 2 weeks and then she got him patched up, or did this linger on with infections and stuff for months and months and months to where they're barely, you know, getting by?
Yeah, where she really saves him. They do a little bit of that, a couple of things where it's you kind of have people saving each other. And again, this is a horrible world. And sort of that. But yeah, that was the only real complaint I had about the entire show. Again, I truly thought like the episode 5 Endurance Survivor was one of the best pieces of television I'd ever watched. I actually thought in many respects the background episode, both background episodes, the ones with the two survivalists and her with her friend, were sort of brilliantly done episodes in the way they did it. I thought the one with her and her friend in particular, and the idea of them navigating this world as teenagers and as very confused teenagers. And they do a lot with the idea of like not understanding the way the world works because of the stuff. The way they see the mall and like not understanding the mall does a great job of the things. But like they love video games. You know, they get really into the video games and then the merry-go-round and stuff like that. But you get a lot of that kind of thing of like, these are people that have both been isolated from this world. Even though they've grown up in it, they've been isolated from this world because they're living in a post-apocalyptic world that this isn't a part of anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And so they don't understand human society except for Fedra, except for the Fireflies. You know, they have that kind of thing. And like she even says when they first pull into Wyoming, where he's like, is this what the world used to be like? You know, and the answer is no, like this is, you know, not even close.
Yeah.
But it gives you the idea of like, no, but this is, it's Wild West. Like it makes some sense as to the way they have it. I'm going to say this is something I bumped into. I have no idea if this was intended, but quite frankly, when I sound that, I saw a little bit of Ayn Rand in there.
Okay.
And the idea of the getting away society, you know, the who is and then escaping.
John Galt.
Who is John Galt? You know, the famous line where they all kind of go to that conclave in California, I think it is, and they disappear into it because they can. I kind of got that from that idea. It's like this is all, we all work together. It's a commune. He says, you're communist. And he's like, we're not communists. Yeah, we are. This is a commune. We're communists. And I was like, that's great. You know, so he's right. Mm-hmm. But yeah, those are the kind of things that I thought were just really, there were so many little subtle things like that that they just did so well. To me, it made the problem with the Fireflies even more critique.
Yeah, I can see that.
And again, I wanted one more episode. I wanted them to put an episode between it where it was the, you could have had the beginning of 8 expanded, discussing what are the Fireflies, who are they, you could have gone into the whole past, sort of stuff like that. You even just could have made that episode longer. I mean, it's HBO, they can make the shows any length they want, they were. That would have been nice. That was the one thing I had sort of to play with it. Now, again, they may get into it. They may not have wanted to get into it. They may have purposely done it because of what was in the video game. I just don't know.
Yeah.
But that was the that was my one take from it.
All right. So overall, sounds like this is a strong recommend for you.
Yeah, I would recommend this to anybody as a show to watch. The things I would say in conjunction with it, it is violent and it's emotionally draining.
It is. More emotionally draining than violent. But I mean, the violence...
The violence is emotionally draining.
Yeah, and it's like I said, it's not that much zombie violence. There's more human-on-human violence than everything. I did read for season 2, which who knows when that's going to come out with the writer's strike that's going on. But they're promising to fix all the things that aren't broken. More zombies, more fights, more gun battles, all the stuff that I find boring as hell. They're going to make sure there's more of that in the next one. So we'll see what happens with season 2. Again, I don't object to that kind of stuff. It's fun if it's in service of plot. I just worry that when you shove more in just because people are complaining that there's not enough big dumb action, you just get big dumb action that doesn't do anything.
And again, it's the kind of thing where I look at a lot of like great zombie movies. Like look at a lot of great Night of the Living Dead, very little zombie dying.
Yeah.
28 Days Later, very little zombie dying. You know, I mean, it's like the zombies are there to force the humans together.
Yeah.
You have to always keep that in mind. That's the purpose of a zombie movie. You know, it doesn't even need to be a zombie. It's what Evil Dead does. You know, Evil Dead 2 does.
Yeah, it's a comedy
zombie movie.
It's to put a boundary around where the people can go.
Yeah.
And then watch the human relationship slowly deteriorate.
Within
The mist is the same thing. Yeah. What happens? You get a bunch of different people in a crisis situation. How do they respond?
Yeah. And you get the people who take charge. You get the people who, you know, fall apart. You know, things like that. And it's they happened to, the comment I had with Last of Us is they did it particularly well. And they did it particularly well in a genre that's had a lot of movies do it particularly well. You know, and again, I fall back on the original Night of the Living Dead, which to me is a brilliant movie. It's a really brilliant movie. And I fall back on 28 Days Later, which to me is one of the best zombie movies made. Partially because of the fact that it's just, the zombies are so different and the dealing with the zombies, but also dealing with the way you have to navigate it. You have to navigate it, having it in the same boat he is, having no idea what's happened.
Yeah.
And learning about it sort of post hoc. You know, and that kind of stuff works really well. I thought they did a great job with this. I thought it was great where they kind of did these backstories that you didn't need, but set up the world and in some sense made it more tragic.
What I think really works so well about this series in particular is that everything, the way the information is doled out to you, it makes it all believable. You're given a basic, plausible scientific explanation for why people turn into zombies.
Yeah.
Like, but you're not given too much. It's a fungus. It takes control of you. It's a real fungus. It's cordyceps. Like, it exists. And this is sort of a what if.
It's a fungus, we have nothing that can cure it. Because, and the problem I had with it is we have antifungals, but they'll kill us.
Yeah.
Which they didn't say, but that was the, taking an antifungal will typically kill you. You know, if you take it internally.
Everything was believable. You could see a world where this is what happens. Like once they give you the predicates for the fungal infection, the devolution of society into a bunch of Fedra-managed enclaves makes some logical sense, right? The only place we would survive is someplace that has enough controls over who gets in and out to prevent an infection from getting in and spreading because it spreads so fast.
And you see the way they do it.
Yeah.
And that's what I liked about it. You see the idea of the Fedra doing it, which is kind of the modern response, and this is miserable and horrible. You get the Wyoming city, which is, again, kind of a... Again, to me, it had Ayn Rand feels to it. With the idea that, like, hey, no, this works. And even the fact that they don't use the little device, they use a dog.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like, okay, you know, that's kind of an, you know, they've sort of purposely put aside the world in ways because they don't need to, and living by an older standard. They have no desire to have cars because horses work fine.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of stuff with it. You get the preacher with the idea of the religious enclave that gets really scary really fast. You know, now they didn't have to go that way. They could have had one be great, but it works really well with the idea of is this good or is this a cult? And you really get that, ooh, this is a cult early on.
It does give you that vibe kind of right away.
Yeah. And quite frankly, I credit that to the guy who plays him.
Yeah.
He's very good at being creepy without being creepy. And stuff like that. And, you know, you get those kind of things with it. You get the survivalist enclave. There's all these different ways you could respond to this. And some of them are good, some of them are bad. But unfortunately, a lot of them are bad.
Yeah.
And that was what I thought they really did a good job with it, is to what the thing was. And what does it mean to navigate these? And again, that's the tragic, the one I really had with it, where it was the, if he never would have been involved in this thing, he would have been in something where he would have gone with her, they would have gone out to this survivalist enclave, and they would have lived the rest of their lives there happily.
Yep.
Except that's not what happened. And it only just doesn't happen.
So you thought, I guess, the last episode was the weakest?
I thought the last episode was one of the weakest. I thought, quite frankly, the first episode was also one of the weakest.
Yeah, and I had
trouble.
That.
It had trouble getting itself going.
Yeah, gonna have trouble getting you oriented. There's a lot to introduce and dole out.
Yeah, and he had to get his past, obviously, you know, and stuff like that from it. You got the idea of the outbreak. They did a good job of introducing the outbreak and what it was. But you had to have him explain the zombies, which he does more in episode two.
Yeah.
Once they start traveling through Boston, you start getting the, this is what the zombies are. This is who they are. You get the introduction from the fungal scientist in the beginning. It's that kind of thing where it's like, okay, these work. This makes sense, you know, type of thing with it. But it was hard to orient. And unfortunately, you needed to orient very quickly on who Allie was.
Yeah.
Because she was important to the plot and it was hard. And by the time you'd oriented who she was, you'd already missed all that.
Yeah, that's kind of why I want to go back and rewatch it and see if some of that makes more sense in the second viewing.
So, yeah.
Okay, well, I think we beat that one to death.
I think we did.
All right, so next time...
long episode.
What are we going to do? We're going to talk about... should we do Bad Batch Season 2?
Probably Bad Batch Season 2, because I haven't seen Mandalorian yet, so we should probably do that.
All right, so that'll be the next one in LGG In Camera. And thank you for tuning in, and just bear with us while we get our footing in this new format, and hopefully we can get more of these out to you soon.
Yep, we'll see you back soon.
All right.
The views expressed by the participants of this program are their own and do not represent the views of, nor are they endorsed by, Lewis Rice LLC, its officers, directors, employees, agents, representatives, shareholders, and subsidiaries. None of the content should be considered legal advice. As always, consult a lawyer. This podcast was produced and recorded in St. Louis, Missouri.